Well, we're continuing our series today on the parables of Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew. And so we come to two new parables here, the mustard seed and the leaven. Now, to set this up, this is kind of one really long parable. The parable of the sower, and the parable of the weeds, and the parable of the mustard seed and the leaven. It's all one big parable that Jesus just keeps expounding upon and going into greater detail about. But the context of this conversation has to do with the fact that all of these crowds of people have been hearing and experiencing Jesus, but the responses to him are varied. There's lots of different responses. Not everybody hears Jesus and goes, yes. Not everyone is stoked on the message. And not everyone who says yes sticks with it. And not everyone who claims to be a follower of Jesus is actually doing it. But at the heart of this whole discussion is this fundamental truth. Jesus is everything he promises to be. He is the healer of trauma, of wounds. He is the restorer of dignity. He is the one who forgives sins. He's the defender of the weak. He is the vindicator of the invisible. Jesus is the artist of new identities and the renewer of souls and the renewer of bodies. Jesus is the source and the will and the ability to do good. Jesus is the great defeater of evil. Jesus is the judge of all human powers. And Jesus is the humble king. And Jesus is bringing his kingdom to the world. He is who he says he is. He does what he claims to do. He accomplishes what he promises. Jesus in these parables is the good seed. He is the one given to the world for the world to take into themselves by faith in order that they might consume him in a good way. What a wild thing. Our God chooses to give himself to us that we might have him, feed on him, utilize him, be changed by him. That we not only have a God who is loving and merciful and gracious, but we have a God who wants to be united to us. Is this good news? That we would be one with him, that we would then grow up into his image. That's the picture of these parables. And that we would then, as worship, bear him a harvest, a testimony from our lives, from the good seed in us, for him to again sow into the world. So the picture here is that God gives Jesus the good seed, which in him is everything needed for salvation, for fulfillment of life, for transformation, and a vision that changes the world. He's the good seed. And we receive the good seed by faith, meaning we put our trust into that good seed, and we are the soil that envelops it, pulls in the seed, and then is devoted to the seed. And that seed grows into something beautiful and good that bears fruit. And that fruit is our testimony in the world that the good seed was good enough for me. And the good seed has changed me and saved me. And see in me the difference. This is the fruit. It's a proclamation to everyone who knows you. Look at how Jesus is loving me. Changing me, forming me, making me is enough for me. Isn't that our testimony? And that bears a harvest. That is a new seed being sent out into the world that other soil would take it needed. Do you see it? So this is the heart of the whole parables. But then it brings us to this question that I think is driving under the surface of the disciples that they don't know how to ask And this is why Jesus is giving these parables. Why doesn't this good seed, why doesn't Jesus work the same for everyone? Why doesn't everyone receive him? Why isn't everyone changed the way he promises? In these parables, Jesus is trying to show that there's four essential truths. The first is that the sower and the seed are always good. So the problem here of why doesn't everyone experience Jesus to the highest degree, why doesn't everyone receive Jesus if he's so good, the first answer to that question, Jesus is saying, it's not a sower problem and it's not a seed problem. It's not a problem with God, and it's not a problem with the gospel. The second thing that Jesus is trying to get across in these parables is it's actually the soil that determines the growth. And the soil is the human heart. Robin, can you do me a favor? I think their door's open to that hallway, if you could just close that door. There's too much joy going on in there, those kids. Isn't that a beautiful sound? Okay, so the second truth is this. The first is that the sower and the seed are always good. And the second is that the soil, which is the human heart, the human spirit, actually determines the rate of growth. So we see that in the parable of the sower, the hard ground, where the seed just gets trampled on. It's hard for it to grow. The rocky ground with worldly comforts. It's hard for the gospel to grow. I've been thinking about that one a lot. Just this idea that in a world that's offering you comforts, your rootedness in the gospel doesn't go deep because you keep it shallow to keep going to other things to cope. That's why the Western world struggles to form deeply mature Christians. Is because we're adding Jesus to a host of other comforts. And you go and you live in other parts of the world, in other climates and other cultures, where there's less resources, and you're forced to go, I've got to find a better, more consistent resource, and I've got to stop going to these dry wells. I need the one that works, Jesus. That's actually why we see a more vibrant, passionate faith in other parts of the world. Well, the Western world drowns in comfort, false comfort, short-term comfort, and never goes rooted in the gospel. So Jesus' main point, though, is that the problem's never the seed, the problem's not the sower, the problem, so to speak, has to do with the soil. And there's this other piece, too, this third essential truth of these parables, is that the evil one, the devil, is actively at work devouring good seed. So there is an evil at work within the world that is devoted to finding the good seed of the gospel and destroying it. It's tempting us to loosely hold to the gospel. It's choking out the good seed with troublesome weeds, which we looked at last week. Because what do those weeds do? They require a ton of energy. The drama in your life, the conflict in your life that you're like, why? Every time something good happens, something bad seems to rise up. Anyone ever feel like that? And you're like, oh, just when we are on the edge of something good, all this problem sprung up. That's what the weeds do, is they steal energy. Because you're ready to go, let's level up. Let's move forward. Let's gain equity. And now it's like, oh, we're back to survival, fighting for nutrients because the weeds are stealing so much energy. Man, that drives me bonkers. Even writing my sermon, I'm just like, stupid weeds. So the enemy is doing everything in his power to stop your growth and stifle your testimony. Because here's what happens. As soon as we feel like, I see the sufficiency of Jesus. I see the fulfillment of Jesus. I feel like I've got my head above water and I'm stepping into new things. And then all this attack comes in and it's like, actually, you suck. Actually, this is hard. Actually, you're barely doing it. Actually, are you even a Christian? And where does all that joy of your testimony go? Stifled. Anyone feel like that? Jesus is saying this is the work of the enemy. Which is helpful because what we tend to think is this is either my failure or somebody else's failure. And so we tend to go, oh, we can't be, you know, vibrant in our testimony about Jesus because, well, we're kind of still, things are still not going very well. And maybe it's a me problem or whatever. And so it stifles the testimony. But Jesus is trying to say, listen, there are forces at work within the world that are actively attacking the good fruit that you're trying to bear. It's not all a you problem, actually. You hear that? It's not all a you problem. That there's evil at work within the world. And then the fourth essential truth that Jesus is getting to in these parables is highlighted in these next two. The mustard seed and the leaven. So let's unpack that together. Verse 31. Because at this point, what they're starting to see is like, man, there's so much against the gospel. There's so much opposing our fruitfulness. How are we ever going to bear fruit in this world when there's so much bad still going on? And so just to push the point further, Jesus is going to push them into a truth of supreme comfort. He put another parable before them saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants. Now, the mustard seed is a common New Testament analogy that Jesus uses. And it's around this idea of the mustard plant, which is a herb. Now, compared to the other herbs, the mustard seed grows huge. Right? You compare mustard plant to like a basil plant. It's itty-bitty versus like 20 feet high, especially in the ancient world. So Jesus is trying to say that his movement, his gospel, his seed is seemingly very small, the smallest of all seeds. And why does he say that? Because the gospel is inherently humble. So the way of Jesus is not self-aggrandizing and does not present itself as flashy. It comes in low. And there's all sorts of reasons that we could talk about Jesus' humility and the smallness and why Jesus' movement should have never caught on and never been significant in human history. It's a lowly carpenter's son, right? This is not the God the world was looking for. The ancient world is looking for a supreme God, like Islam's Allah. That's the kind of God the ancient world is looking for, a supreme conqueror who's powerful in all things all the time. Nobody is looking for a God like Jesus. And so this is what's called in the New Testament a stumbling block, meaning it's very difficult for people to understand this. Now, and to see it, because they stumble over its difficulty. Now, in our Western culture, is our Western culture looking for a God like Allah? Do we want a supreme God who rules over us and is strict with us? Does that sound like Western culture? Heck no. Western culture is like, don't tell me what to do ever. Right? And so this is actually why the Western world struggles with the divinity of Jesus. Because he's not just a man, he is God. Anyway, that's another sermon. But all the reasons of the way of Jesus that seem to be small and insignificant, a carpenter's son, an Israelite from a nation that came from nothing, from Nazareth. Does anything good come from there? His ministry is focused on the poor, the broken, and the destitute. Oh, I just lost all my air on that one, sorry. And he's calling humanity to trust in a God who's loving, healing, forgiving, and providing for them, and they're looking for political solutions. The ultimate foolishness of the way of Jesus is the cross. The idea that God would become so weak and allow himself to be broken and shamed and despised and rejected, all in order that he might save humanity from sin and evil. This is such a foreign concept to the world. And then the idea of the resurrection. No, that is beyond and outside people's expectations. And then when Jesus ascends and takes his heavenly throne, what does he do in his big, great, kingly act to change the world? He starts church. He starts the gathering of his people. He doesn't dethrone all the evil rulers and the governments and the nations. He's like, I'm going to start my church. Is the church a stumbling block? Does it seem foolish to our generation and to the world around us? And who is gathering his church? Who's leading his church? 12 simple men, fishermen, tax collectors, nobodies. This is his grand plan of changing and saving the world? It's a lot to process. And all the while, you're experiencing and seeing Jesus and asking, could this really be true? Is this who God is and how God works? Does my life or this situation qualify to be saved by this Jesus? And if it's not the incredibleness of Jesus that makes us doubt, it's the terribleness of our situations that makes us think, God couldn't possibly care about this part of me. Why would God save the world like this? And then when we come around to believing that God would save the world like this, why would he even save my life and my particulars and my circumstances? And so these things stay separate. But this is what the fourth essential truth that Jesus is getting across here and revealing in these parables is, that the good seed is small but unstoppable. Even when faced with all these challenges, this seed never stops growing and never loses. Verse 32, he says, it is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree. The foolishness of the gospel of Jesus still outperforms every other means of coping, comforting, transforming, or strengthening your life. Let me say that again. The foolishness of the gospel, the humbleness of it, the idea that God would come to save you and you need only to trust in God's way of salvation, that foolishness will outperform every other system, every other religion, every other coping strategy you have. Every other transformation plan that you've put in place, all of your strengthening endeavors, the gospel of Jesus will outperform them. All the world's success paths will underperform in comparison to the gospel of Jesus. Even on the path, even in the rocks, even amongst the weeds, the good seed of Jesus will find good soil and will outperform every other plant. This is what Jesus is saying. And so this is true both in our individual life and in our collective life within the church. Jesus says the branches of the tree will spread throughout the world into every culture and people and every generation and every tradition. And for the last 2,000 years, this is what we've seen. Look it up on YouTube. Look for a video on the spread of Christianity. The church has grown from Jerusalem to Greece, from Greece to India, to the Africas, to Asia, and least of all to us here in the West. The church is truly global now, and the kingdom is ever spreading. And I love that, because even as the atheists in the West boast of Christianity's decline, the church is growing ever more rapidly in every other part of the world. And the younger generations here at home are hungry for spiritual truth. Hungry for it. So I think the promise for Christ Church is that if we prioritize being good soil that feasts on the good seed, he will most assuredly bear and reap a harvest of souls from amongst us on the island. And as we grow and bear fruit, all difficulties and all challenges will be left in the dust and we'll never have any problems. Right? Isn't that the promise of what this mustard seed is? It will grow and branches will spread and there will never be any other problems because we'll supersede the weeds and the rocks will be far left behind and the path will be a distant memory and we'll be big and huge and beautiful. Right? What's the catch in the parable? Verse 32. But when it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. In the parable of the sower, what role did the birds have? Do you remember? They took the seeds. They were an analogy for the devil, for his children who consumes the good seed on the trample. In that initial parable, the birds would come, snatch the seed, consume it, eat it for themselves, feed on it themselves. Jesus is now saying that his kingdom and his church will grow to such heights that evil will not only be present like the weeds, but will build nests for itself, where it will perch, waiting to consume the good seed. At first, you read the parable and you're like, "Oh, birds. Love birds. We'll have a big tree with lots of lovely birds." But if we stick to the analogies of the parables that Jesus is saying, it's like, just a heads up, as the branches get bigger and the branches get stronger, bad actors are going to build nests in those branches. Dang it. So when we look back over 2,000 years of church history, do we ever see any bad actors in the church? It's a messy business, isn't there? And I think this parable is good timing for a lot of us because we exist in a time in the history of the church. Let's just speak with Canada here. We've had the Me Too movement come up, and with it, this activist pursuit to point out evil at work in positions of power. And people ask me about this stuff all the time, are you against cancel culture and are you against all these things? And what do you think of the Me Too movement? And my view, some of my cards on the table here. My view, based on what I see of the scriptures, based on what I see of church history, is I look at a moment like this and I go, Jesus is working in this. I look at it and I go, Jesus is judging his church. If there's abuse of powers in the church, if there is abuse is taking place within the church, that the way to deal with those things is to bring them into the light according to the teachings of Jesus, to be publicly repented for according to the cross of Jesus, isn't it? Reparations made according to the resurrection of Jesus, and real lasting generational changes according to the ascension of Jesus. So for me, I go, Jesus is doing something. Jesus is using this to purify his church. But here in this parable, what Jesus is communicating is that he is not surprised by this. And again, his reason for not dealing with these things is because he doesn't want to harm the harvest. Jesus is holding off on judgment because he's still saving people from it. This is always the fundamental truth that comes up in the New Testament, is Jesus is saying, the time for judgment is coming, but it's not yet, because this time is about sowing mercy for anyone who will eat it and receive it. And so here, this is the work that Jesus is doing. And what he's doing is helping us manage our expectation. His kingdom in the now, but not yet, is going to have challenges. The church is not going to always be a community without conflict or difficulty. Think of all the ways that Jesus warns us in the New Testament. Of goats, of weeds, of wolves, birds, false prophets, vipers, false teachers. These are all things that Jesus says, heads up, as you follow me in the way and as you build the church, these are always going to rise up in your midst. We grieve that, don't we? But here's what this does. This helps us hold to the good seed. And Jesus is saying, just because they're present doesn't mean they win. And this is where I think there's a spirit over the Canadian church that feels kind of like evil's won. Things are bad. Things are hard. Who can even hope in this? I was saying to someone yesterday, like, my spirit all day yesterday was just grieving this stuff. Of just being like, how do we hope that this can be better? And this is what's at the heart of the parable, is to go, I am better than this. This week, we went over to Jeffrey and Rosin's house, Jackie and I, to pray with Roz after her successful surgery and her return home. And we were sharing with each other some of the things we're learning and reading about. I was reading a Michael Reeves book, and Jeffrey was reading John Stott's The Cross of Christ, which is what our Jesus' death section and pilgrimage is based off that book. It's the best book. But he read a quote, Jeffrey read a quote to me, and I thought, oh, that fits so perfectly with what we're learning in this text of Scripture, and it's from John Stott. He says, for though the devil is being defeated, he has not conceded defeat. Although he has been overthrown, he has not yet been eliminated. In fact, he continues to wield great power. This is the reason for the tension we feel in both our theology and our experience. On the one hand, we are alive, seated and reigning with Christ, with even the principalities and powers of evil placed by God under his and therefore our feet. Oh, what a sentence that is, eh? On the other, we are warned that those same spiritual forces have set themselves in opposition to us, so that we have no hope of standing against them unless we are strong in the Lord's strength and clad in his armor. Or here's the same paradox in different language. On the one hand, we are assured that having been born of God, Christ keeps us safe, and the evil one does not touch us. On the other, we are warned to watch out because the same evil one prowls around like a roaring lion, looking for someone to devour. When we see the presence of these evil raptors, these birds perched in the church, we might despair as though his kingdom were somehow failing because of their presence. Jesus has one more parable to push home his main point. Verse 33. He told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven that a woman took and hid in 3 measures of flour, till it was all leavened. Here, Jesus is communicating that the good seed is also like leaven. And for anyone who started baking sourdough through COVID, you know what leaven does. It goes a long way, a little bit of leaven, doesn't it? All you need to do is let a little bit of leaven, that's what the starter is, right? Just double checking here. Let it come in contact with the flower, and what does it do? It'll spread through the whole lump. Jesus is saying this is what his kingdom is like. If you just place a small community of his apprentices in any town, any city, or region, they will spread like leaven. If you put gospel in a community, and that community is a good soil, feasting on that gospel, loving that gospel, safeguarding that gospel, making everything about Jesus all the time, and dealing with every problem with the way of Jesus every time, it cannot be defeated by any of these variables. The path, the rocks, the weeds, or the birds, none of them will win over the good seed. The world and the evil within it is not going to consume the kingdom. The kingdom is going to consume the world. That's what Jesus is saying. In its humility, in the foolishness of the cross, the way of Jesus will outperform everything. And to leaven, all organic materials, food. In that lump, it is feasting on everything in there. It is easily conquering, but slowly working its way through. Leaven gathers all it touches into itself. And in the case of the kingdom, it's gathering all things into its redemption, into its salvation, into its goodness. So the good news of Jesus is the good seed, is leaven to a world steeped in darkness, but it's also leaven in the life of every person. That if you have this gospel will always be at work within you. And this is the piece. We hit these weeks, we hit these days, we hit these circumstances where we go, it's too far gone, it's too big, it's too bad, I'm too tired. This vision isn't possible. And we go, how? How could any of this be? And the answer is always Jesus. Jesus is the trump card to all of these problems. And it is the relentless refusal of the apprentice of Jesus to believe that the circumstances win, to believe that the evil is more powerful, to believe that their weakness is more defining. The devoted apprentice says, but Jesus. This is so hard, but Jesus. I'm so weak, but Jesus. There's so much wrong in the world, but Jesus. And Jesus is saying that if you will hold to that seed with all of your trust, it will grow bigger than any other plan or option or strategy that you can conjure up other than him. So when we look at this future and we go, there's always going to be bad actors that arise. There's always going to be weeds and there's always going to be temptations in the rocks. And we're going to get trampled at times. We're supposed to hold to this fundamental truth where Jesus goes, I understand all those problems, but I will outperform them. That's the promise of these parables for those who can see it. The heart without faith will say, yeah, I've been trampled, I give up. The heart without faith will say, these other comforting options seem sufficient. The way of Jesus doesn't make sense for me. The heart without faith will look at the weeds and go, ugh, there's weeds. Why even bother? And the heart without faith will look up and see the birds and go, what's the point of bearing fruit if the birds are going to take it? And Jesus is saying his gospel, his presence of himself and his accomplishments will outperform all of those things every time and still bear a harvest even in the difficulty of it. Is that like a glass half full kind of view of the world? Or is that like a glass, like really full kind of view of the world? It's a view of the future that is realistic to go, yeah, hard stuff's going to be there. But what gets your focus? I'll be honest with you, my personality type naturally, without Jesus, goes, see the problems, hold to the problems. That's my natural tendency without Jesus. Look at those weeds. Let's talk about the weeds. Let's understand the weeds. The weeds are everywhere. And I just consume the weed. I just hold to the weeds. My personality type will be looking for birds everywhere. Why bother even going over there? There's going to be a bird there. Why bother bearing fruit? The bird's going to come and get it. And here Jesus is saying, no, they're there. I'm not pretending they're not. And I'm not promising to take them away yet. No, they're there. But give all of your focus, all of your effort, all of your words, and all of your trust to the good seed. You know, this is a bit of a public confession. One of the bad habits Jackie and I have had through the years is we'll have like an unfiltered conversation about the hard things, whether it's kids, whether it's church, whether it's whatever, whatever's going on in the world, and it's just like really fleshy conversation of just, oh, I'm mad about this, and this is stupid, and I wish this never happened. And we have this like very unfiltered conversation where we're like, nobody's listening. And then we go, okay, but now let's choose the gospel. And we do that, and we authentically, wholeheartedly do that. We're like, okay, this is a whole lot of grumpiness, and let's choose the way of Jesus and reform this, and then we show back up in those situations believing in the gospel. And I think that's good. That's healthy. But the new health that Jesus is saying is, what if we don't do all that? What if right from the get-go, we go gospel? What if even we don't think that, and we just think gospel? What if we don't let ourselves go to that place of real frustration and anger, but instead go to Jesus? What if we hold to that my feelings are going to feel according to Jesus, my thoughts are going to think according to Jesus, my words are going to speak according to Jesus, and then we're going to act according to Jesus in this situation? What if we plan for this? What if we're ready? The birds are going to come, the weeds are going to poke us in the butt. All these things are going to happen, but we're going to be unfazed and we're going to hold to Jesus. What if we do that instead? And what if we refuse to be impressed with how bad things are? Refuse to be overwhelmed by them and instead give all of our efforts to being absolutely enamored with how good Jesus is? Not because we don't see the problems, but because we see him as better, bigger, and sufficient for the problems. Isn't that what we want? And so the promise of the parables here then is for the heart that is good soil like that and holds to the good news of Jesus will outperform all the problems. And isn't that a good vision for the future? Oh, there's a mess going on at home right now. Oh, there's a mess at work. Oh, there's a mess at church. Oh, there's a mess in my small group. But the way of Jesus is going to outperform the bad. The good's going to outperform the bad. And boy, does that change the narrative, doesn't it? Because what are we looking for? Reasons to celebrate. Reasons to be hopeful. Reasons to keep going. And I'll tell you something, man, does that energize. It brings life, doesn't it? So let's do that today. As we turn our hearts to the table, we'll be honest about the problems, but be enamored with the good news of Jesus as the solution. So if you're comfortable with it, just close your eyes now in preparation.